shoulder. She frowned at him, opened her mouth to ask what he was doing.
No one!
Keeper Promise's voice came as the Quamja fluttered into sight from one of the other corridors.
Some of the other passages end in walls, but most continue on into other such caverns.
Did you see anyone?
Mara asked.
We saw no one.
Keeper Promises said in the slightly miffed tone of someone who's been asked a question he's already answered.
Thank you.
Luke tilted his head to look at Mara.
What do you want? Up or down?
Up,
Mara said, easing away from him. It was always a little disconcerting to look at someone whose face was barely 15 centimeters away.
All the command rooms and other interesting stuff at Hijarna were on the upper floors.
Up it is,
Luke said, releasing his grip on her and crossing to the spiral slideway.
Looks clear,
he added, looking cautiously up into the opening as Mara joined him.
You picking up any danger?
No more than I have been for the past 10 minutes,
Mara said.
Sure, let's try it.
Right.
Luke waved at Keeper of Promises.
Come on, Quamja. We're heading up.
They stepped onto the outer section of the slideway, both of them stumbling slightly as their bodies were forced to catch up with the suddenly moving feet.
It definitely feels like we're getting closer to the aliens,
Luke commented, as the group of Quamja flapped past on their way to the next level.
I just wish I had a better benchmark for the species.
Yes, it'd be nice to know how close they actually were,
Mara agreed, watching above them as the Quamja split up again and headed off in all directions.
One of the reinforcements,
Flyer Through Spikes, Mara tentatively identified him, reappeared overhead as she and Luke reached the level, jabbering away.
He says they found no one up here either,
Luke reported.
Splitter of Stones has suggested...
The flare of her danger sense was Mara's only warning.
Luke!
Down! Luke snapped, igniting his lightsaber. Mara was already dropping to one knee, spinning around as her eyes and blaster searched for a target.
A movement just inside one of the corridors caught her eye. She tracked her blaster toward it, and abruptly, the world exploded into a flash of brilliant blue. Instinctively, she ducked away from the bolt, her blaster spitting return fire.
Another blue flash changed to green as Luke's lightsaber slashed across it, deflecting the bolt across the room. There was another blue flash, again caught by the lightsaber blade. Mara fired twice, had the satisfaction of seeing the half-hidden gunman duck back.
Behind you! Luke barked.
Mara dropped from her kneeling crouch to land flat on her stomach on the ramp, twisting around to face the other direction as she did so.
Two burgundy-uniformed gunmen were visible back there, sprinting from the end of one of the corridors toward the protection of something that looked like a small service vehicle.
She fired two shots, missed with both. And abruptly, one of the gunmen stopped dead in his tracks, raising his weapon toward her in a two-handed grip.
Mara tracked her blaster toward him, a small part of her mind noting the blue skin of his face and hands and the glowing red eyes glaring out at her.
Watch out! But the warning came too late. Even as Mara fired again and then twisted around to search out the new threat, there was another flash of blue, and a lance of agony jabbed into her right shoulder. She might have gasped in pain. She wouldn't remember later whether she had or not. But suddenly, Luke was crouching on the slideway beside her, his surge of fear dimly sensed through the waves of pain hammering at her. His hand briefly probed the area of the wound, and she could feel the pain ease somewhat as the force flowed from him into her.
What do you think?
She managed through clenched teeth.
We seen enough for this pass?
Sounds good to me, he said, his lightsaber humming angrily as he swatted more of the blue blasts.
Then...
She blinked in surprise. Above her was the edge of one of the fortress floors, but it was pulling up and away from her. Even now, she could see, they were coming down to the level they'd started from.
how'd we get to the down part of the slideway?
She asked.
You rolled onto it when you were hit, he told her, shifting his hand from her neck to a supporting grip cradling her shoulders. Don't you remember?
She shook her head. The movement sent a fresh surge of agony through her shoulder. Combat reflex, I guess. Wait, my blaster!
It's all right. Keeper of Promises picked it up, Luke assured her, shutting down his lightsaber. He half rose from his crouch, and she could feel herself also rising in the eerily intangible grip of the Force. Here we go. The level they'd come in on was starting to move past them now. Stretching out to the Force, carrying Mara with him, Luke leaped over the up section of the slideway to land on the solid floor beyond. Cradling her in both arms, he hurried down the corridor toward their hidden door.
Look, I can walk on my own, Mara growled,
glancing back over Luke's shoulder as he ran. Some of the Quamja were visible coming up behind them, but so far there was no sign of other pursuit.
You don't have to carry me.
Don't argue, Luke bit out, his mind frothing with concern and worry. I just hope R2 didn't lock the door. Ah!
Ahead, the door was swinging ponderously open toward them, pushed by an obviously straining child of winds. Trying to work past her pain, Mara stretched out to the door with the Force, giving him as much assistance as she could manage. The droid, rolling forward to help, squawked in surprise and hastily backed up just in time as Luke and Mara charged in, followed by four of the Quamja.
Seal the door!
Mara heard Splitter of Stones' order through Luke's mind as the Quamja flapped madly to a halt.
What about the others?
Luke asked as two of the Quamja landed on the hand grips and began tugging.
They have gone into other passages,
Splitter of Stones said.
They will try to lead the threateners away from this area.
We can hope, Luke said as the door swung back into place.
Seal the door. I'm going to take Mara down to that last landing.
No! Go up!
Mara said, digging out her glow rod with her left hand as Luke started down the stairs.
If they find the door, they'll probably assume we went down.
Makes sense, Luke agreed, turning and heading up. R2, you make sure they get it sealed and then stand guard.
A minute later, they'd reached the landing.
I wish we still had our bedrolls, Luke said as he laid her carefully down on the cold stone and took the glow rod from her. How does it feel?
Like someone's roasting an Ewok in there,
Mara told him.
Not as bad as it was, though. Is that a pain suppression trick you're using on me?
For what it's worth, Luke said, sticking the glow rod between his teeth and stripping off his jacket. It's not nearly as effective on someone else as it is on yourself, he added, talking around the glow rod as he bunched the jacket and slid it under her head as a pillow.
I knew there was something else I should have stuck around the academy long enough to learn,
she said, hissing between her teeth as Luke set the glow rod down on her chest and began carefully pulling the burned edges of cloth away from the wound.
I don't suppose you offer a crash course.
I usually like to ease into that lesson a little more gradually.
Luke's lip twitched.
Ouch.
Mara looked down at her shoulder and immediately wished she hadn't.
Ouch doesn't even begin to cover it,
she told him, feeling a little sick as she resolutely turned her eyes away. The burn was a lot nastier than she'd guessed.
I think I've just decided I'm going to miss the med pack more than I am the bedrolls.
Don't give up just yet, Luke soothed. His fingers were stroking the skin of her shoulder and neck,
and as they did so, the pain again decreased.
I know a couple more tricks.
That feels good,
Mara said, closing her eyes.
I'm putting you into a healing trance, Luke explained,
his voice sounding oddly distant.
It can be a little slow, but sometimes it's as effective as a Bacta tank.
I hope this is one of those times,
Mara murmured. Suddenly, she was feeling very tired.
Yet another wonderful Jedi trick you'll have to teach me sometime. Night, Luke. Don't forget to wake me if the bad guys crash the party.
Good night, Mara,
Luke said softly. Softly and uselessly, she was already sound asleep.
Is she going to die?
An anxious voice asked from beside him. Engrossed in Mara's injury and the setting up of the healing trance, he hadn't noticed Child of Wind's arrival. Some Master Jedi.
No, she'll be all right, he said. The wound isn't dangerous, and I have some healing abilities.
Child of Wind sidled a little closer, peering with unblinking eyes at the woman stretched out at Luke's side.
Was it my fault, Jedi Skywalker?
He asked at last.
Did I not open the door quickly enough?
No, not at all, Luke assured him. It had absolutely nothing to do with you.
Then it was the Quan Zha who failed you.
Luke frowned at the young Quam Quay. Given the annoyingly persistent rivalry between the two groups, he would have expected a note of condemnation, or at least lofty superiority in Child of Wind's judgment. But there was nothing there but regret and sadness.
Perhaps, Luke said. But it may not really be their fault either. The Threateners may have detected our arrival and put together an ambush. And don't forget that cave dwellers like the Quam Zha probably don't see as well in lighted rooms as you or I would.
Child of Wind seemed to consider that.
If the Threateners laid a snare, they may enter this place to search for you.
They might, Luke agreed. If they even know about it, of course. They might not. All the dust in here would indicate it hasn't been used for quite a while.
Still, they may know even if they do not use.
Child of Winds reminded him.
Your friend Machine and the Quam Zha watch and wait below. Should not someone also watch and wait above?
That's a good idea, Luke agreed. Go tell Splitter of Stones I want him to send two of his hunters to stand watch at the next stairway exit above us.
I will obey,
the Quam Quay said, stretching out his wings.
But he will need send only one hunter. I will go myself to watch with him.
Luke opened his mouth to object, closed it again. Child of Winds had been chafing under the casual contempt of the Quam Zha ever since they reached the cave. This was something useful he could do that probably wouldn't be too dangerous.
All right, Child of Winds. Thank you.
There are no thanks needed,
Child of Wind said.
It is only what is right for me to do for the Jedi Skywalker.
He cocked his head for one final look at Mara.
And for his beloved companion.
Spreading his wings, he flapped away into the darkness of the stairway, leaving that last comment echoing uncomfortably in Luke's mind.
Beloved companion. Companion. Beloved.
He looked down at Mara, her familiar features thrown into starkly contrasting areas of light and shadow by the beam of the glow rod.
Beloved.
No, he murmured to himself. No. He liked Mara, certainly. Liked her very much. She was smart and resourceful, with a mental and emotional toughness he could rely on, plus a sharp humor and irreverence that made for a refreshing contrast with the automatic and unthinking awe too many people held him in these days. She'd been a trusted ally through some very hard and dangerous times, sticking with him and Han and Leia, even when the rest of a hostile New Republic hierarchy had declared her untrustworthy. And perhaps most important of all, She was strong and capable in the Force, with the ability to share his thoughts and emotions in a way that even a couple as close as Han and Leia couldn't experience. But he wouldn't love her. He couldn't take that risk. Every time in the past that he had allowed himself the luxury of caring that deeply about a woman, something terrible had happened to her. Gariel had been killed. Callista had lost her Jedi abilities and finally left him. The list of tragedies sometimes seemed endless. Still, if Mara's theory was right, all of those disasters had happened while he was still under the lingering effects of his brush with the dark side. Would things be different now? Could they be different? He shook his head firmly. No. He could try all the logic in the world. Could come up with reason after reason why he could perhaps allow himself to have feelings like that again. But not now. Not with Mara. Because hanging like a dark specter over all of this was the memory of that vision he'd had barely a month ago on Tirfon. The vision where he had seen Han and Leia in danger from a mob, where he'd seen Wedge and Corrin and Rogue Squadron in the heat of battle, where he'd seen himself on the Sajansij balcony from which he would later be taken to Talon Card and learn of Mara's disappearance, and where he'd seen Mara, surrounded by craggy rock and floating motionlessly in a pool of water, her eyes closed, her arms and legs limp, as if in death. He gazed down at her again, a quiet ache in his heart. Perhaps that was her destiny, an end to her life that he could do nothing to prevent. But until that was proved, he would tear his own life apart if necessary to prevent it from happening. And if part of that sacrifice was to keep her out of the shadow of destructive dark side influence he had had on so many others, then that was a sacrifice he would have to make. But for now, what she needed most was to be healed. And that would take no sacrifice, merely time and attention. Good night, he said again, knowing she couldn't hear him. On impulse, he leaned over and kissed her gently on the lips. Then, stretching out on the cold stone next to her, he rested his head beside hers on a corner of his folded jacket, and laid his arm across her chest, where his fingertips could touch the area around her burned shoulder. Easing himself into a sort of half-trance to aid in concentration, he stretched out to the Force and set to work. Chapter 18. It took a few minutes searching, but Wedge finally found the others at a small open-air tap caff, half a block down from the space traffic registration office. There you are, he said a little accusingly as he dropped into the third seat at the table.
What's the problem?
Miranda asked, sipping at the pale blue-green liqueur that had been her constant tap-calf companion ever since they'd met her.
I told you we'd be down the street here.
You're right. I should have guessed where exactly down the street you meant,
Wedge countered, throwing a sour look at her drink.
Aren't you starting a little early in the day?
What, this?
Miranda asked, lifting the glass and turning it this way and that in the morning sunlight.
This is nothing. Anyway, you wouldn't be so heartless as to deny an old woman one of the last remaining pleasures of her declining years, would you?
That old woman excuse is starting to wear a little thin.
Wedge shifted his attention to Corrin and the aromatic mug he was cradling.
And what's your excuse?
Corrin shrugged. I'm just keeping her company. I take it the incoming ship search went badly?
It didn't go at all,
Wedge growled, glaring at Corrin's mug. Now that he thought about it, a drink actually sounded pretty good. But after that rather self-righteous tirade, he could hardly beckon a droid over and order something himself. There was a movement at his side, and a mechanical hand set a mug down on the table in front of him, spilling a few drops first in the ancient, annoying Bothan custom.
What's this?
He asked.
We ordered it when we saw you coming down the street,
Miranda said.
Figured that after dealing with Bothan bureaucracy, you'd want something a little stronger than hot chocolate.
Wedge grimaced. So much for the grand mystique of command.
Thanks,
he said, taking a sip.
So, what happened?
Miranda asked.
They wouldn't let you look at the records for incoming ships?
Not without 15 forms of authorization,
Wedge told her.
It's crazy. Doubly crazy, given that everything on those lists is technically a matter of public record. If I wanted to sit at the spaceport and write down the names of every ship as it came in, I could do it.
They're getting nervous, Korn murmured, swirling his mug. Worried that Vengeance might start taking potshots at their best customers.
Whatever. There's no point in kicking against a bureaucracy,
Miranda said.
Let's think this through logically.
Wedge waved a hand in invitation.
We're listening.
All right.
Miranda took a sip of her drink.
I think we could all agree that if someone is after the Drevstarn shield generator, a frontal assault is out. Unless they brought a portable proton torpedo launcher with them, that building is far too well protected.
Which means they'll have to rely on subterfuge, Korn agreed. Fairly obvious so far.
Don't rush me, Miranda admonished him. Now, we can also assume they won't be able to suborn any of the techs or other people who work inside. But how about planting something on one of them?
You mean like a bomb?
Wedge asked doubtfully.
I doubt it. It's a big area down there. Any bomb strong enough to do any serious damage would be easily detected.
Besides, if they have any brains at all, they have the workers change clothes before they go into the actual generator areas.
Korn added.
That also protects against spy monitors being slipped onto anyone.
So the workers are out,
Miranda said.
What about the various underground conduits that bring in power and water?
There aren't any water conduits,
Wedge said thoughtfully.
Water and food are supposedly brought in from outside and triple scanned for contaminants.
He looked at Korn.
Power, though, is another matter entirely.
You might be onto something,
Korn agreed, frowning as he drummed his fingers softly on the table.
Each shield generator is supposed to have its own self-contained power supply, but it's referred to as a backup supply, which implies the primary power source comes in from the outside.
Where are you getting all this stuff from, by the way?
Miranda asked.
Not Bothan propaganda, I hope.
No, we pulled it from New Republic military files,
Wedge told her.
Unfortunately, what we had was a little skimpy on details.
Typical Bothan paranoid closed-mouthedness,
Miranda grunted.
I don't suppose you'd have any idea where exactly the conduits are located.
Not even a guess,
Wedge told her.
Well, that's our second order of business, then,
Miranda said.
Getting the complete schematics of that building.
Korn cocked an eyebrow.
I hope you're not expecting the Bothans to just give them to us.
Miranda snorted.
Of course not, she said. That's why it's our second order of business. We can't very well go visit the construction records building during the day.
Wedge exchanged looks with Korn.
The building's only open during the day,
he pointed out carefully.
That's right,
Miranda said, smiling encouragingly.
You catch on fast.
Wedge looked at Korn again. Korn.
The other made a face, but then he shrugged.
We do have our orders, he reminded Wedge. And this isn't just to protect the Bothans, remember?
I suppose,
Wedge said reluctantly. So much for the mystique of command. So much for command at all. Still, Miranda was making sense. Unfortunately. So if that's the second order of business, what's the first?
I thought we'd go pull the records for the last few days' worth of outgoing transmissions, Miranda said. If Vengeance is plotting something, their group here probably has to report in every now and again.
Wedge felt his mouth drop open. You want to check message traffic? Do you have any idea how much of that there is from this planet?
That's exactly why they won't worry about it, Miranda said cheerfully. They'll figure no one would be crazy enough to bother sifting through it all.
Present company accepted, obviously.
Well, of course. Miranda held up a hand. Now, wait a minute. It's not as bad as it sounds. We can cut out all transmissions from major or established corporations. Even if one of them was involved, they wouldn't send out anything under their own name. We can also cut out any non-encrypted messages, and we can cut out any messages over, say, 50 words. That ought to give us something manageable.
Wedge frowned. Why everything over 50 words?
The shorter the message, the harder it is to decrypt, Corin explained, sounding as dubious as Wedge felt. One of the things I learned in Corsec. My question is, if we aren't going to be able to read it, why bother looking for it in the first place?
To find out where it's going, of course, Miranda said, draining the last of her liqueur. The guys at this end can be as cagey as they want, but if they've got a sloppy contact down the line, we can still nail them. All we need is a likely system, and I can call Card's people down on them from that end.
It still sounds crazy, Wedge declared, looking at Corin. What do you think?
It's no crazier than breaking into the construction records building after hours, Corin pointed out.
Thanks for the reminder, Wedge sighed. Sure, let's give it a try. I just hope the computer on our shuttle is up to a job like this.
If not, the one on my ship can handle it, Miranda assured him, getting to her feet. Come on, let's get moving.
Captain! Nalgal turned away from the unremitting blackness hanging in front of the Imperial Star Destroyer Tyrannic.
Yes?
Relay spark from the strike team, sir, Intelligence Chief Oisin said, coming to a parade ground halt and handing the captain a datapad.
I'm afraid you're not going to like it.
Really?
Nalgal said, giving Oisin a long, hard look as he took the datapad. Given the Tyrannic's blindness out here, it was unarguably nice to receive these brief reports from the Imperial Intelligence Strike Team on the Bothawi surface. But on the other hand, any secret transmission, even an innocuous one sent to an unobtrusive relay buoy, simply gave the enemy one more handle to latch onto. And for that potentially dangerous transmission to contain bad news, the message was, as always, brief. Now, 10 days to completion of Flashpoint. We'll keep timetable updated.
10 days?
Nalgal transferred his glare from the datapad to Oisin.
What is this 10 days nonsense? The report 2 days ago said it would only be 6 days.
I don't know, sir,
Oisin said.
All messages to us have to be kept short.
Yes, I know.
Nalgal cut him off, glowering at the datapad again. 10 more days in this clitarded blindness. Just exactly what the crew of this twitchy ship needed.
They just blazing well better be keeping Bastion better informed than they are us.
I'm sure they are, Captain,
Oisin said.
Paradoxically, perhaps. It's much safer to send out a long transmission on a commercial frequency via the holonet than it is to send a short-range spark to us out here.
I'm fairly well versed in communications theory, thank you,
Nalgal said icily. A
prudent man, he reflected darkly, would have found a way to beat a hasty retreat after delivering news like this. Either Oisin wasn't as prudent as Nalgal had always assumed, or he was twitchy enough himself to be spoiling for a fight with his captain. Or else this was part of a private evaluation of his captain's mental state. And much as he would like to deny it, Nalgal had to admit this idleness and isolation were getting on his nerves, too.
I was simply concerned that the delay not upset Bastion's master plan,
he told the other, forcing calmness into his voice.
I also wish I knew how in blazes they could lose 6 whole days out of a 2-month timetable.
Oisin shrugged.
Without knowing what exactly their job is down there, I can't even hazard a guess,
he said reasonably.
As it is, we'll just have to rely on their judgment.
He lifted his eyebrows slightly.
And on Grand Admiral Thrawn's own genius, of course.
Of course,
Nalgal murmured.
The question is whether all those armed hotheads around Bothui will be able to hold off another 10 days before they start shooting. What's the warship count up to anyway?
The latest probe ship report is in that file, sir,
Oisin said, nodding toward the datapad.
But I believe the current number is 112.
112?
Nalgal echoed, frowning as he pulled up the report. There it was. 112.
This can't be right,
he insisted.
It is, sir,
Oisin assured him.
31 new warships have come in, apparently all in the past 10 hours.
Nalgal scanned the list. A nicely matched set, too. 14 pro-Bothan Diamalan and Defarian ships to 17 anti-Bothan Ashori ships.
This is unbelievable,
he said, shaking his head.
Don't these aliens have anything better to do?
Oisin snorted under his breath.
From the news reports the probe ships have been bringing in, it's only because most of the New Republic does have better things to do that we haven't been buried by 3 times as many ships,
he said.
But don't worry. I have faith in the New Republic's diplomatic corps. I'm sure they'll keep things calm until we're ready to move.
I hope so,
Nalgal said softly, turning to gaze out at the blackness again. Because after all this waiting, if he didn't get a clear shot at this alien-loving rebel scum, he was going to be very angry. Very angry indeed. The annoyingly cheery door chime of the Exoticalia Pet Emporium rang, and Navit stepped in through the back room doorway to see Cliff close the door behind him.
Business is booming, I see,
he commented, glancing around the customer-free store as he walked between the rows of caged animals to the service counter.
Just the way I like it,
Navit said, leaning an elbow on the counter and gesturing the other to a chair.
You get those messages off?
Yeah. Cliff circled behind him and dropped into one of the seats.
But I don't think any of them are gonna like it.
Navit shrugged.
They can join the club. It's going to be awkward for us, too, you know. We're going to have to delay the delivery date of those 3 Mokrins, but there's not a lot any of us can do about it. It was the Bothans' idea to start keeping their techs locked in the shield building for 6 days at a time, not ours.
Yeah, Cliff said heavily.
I suppose we can't be expected to send our little time bombs in with the next shift any earlier than the next shift goes on duty.
Don't worry about it, Navit soothed him. Our cover is plenty secure, and it won't hurt Horvick and Penson to wash dishes for the whole din a while longer. We can hover an extra 6 days without any trouble.
Maybe not, Cliff said darkly. Guess who I spotted at the comm center while I was checking for messages?
Navit felt his eyes narrow.
Not our 2 new rep military types.
In the skin, and twice as pompous.
Cliff nodded.
And they had company. Some old woman in a hooded cloak who seemed to know her way around better than they did. A fringe type, no doubt about it.
Navid scratched his cheek. You think she's the one who got their wallets back from the Bothan lifters?
Well, they had their wallets with them, Cliff said. So I'd say, yeah, she's probably the one.
New rep military types with a fringe lifter. Interesting. Are they picking up or delivering?
Neither, Cliff told him. They were pulling a list of all outgoing transmissions for the past 5 days.
Interesting,
Nabbit said, drumming his fingers gently on the countertop.
Analysis?
They're on to us, Cliff growled. Or at least they know someone's here. He lifted an eyebrow. And they suspect it has to do with the Drev Starn shield generator, or they wouldn't have spent so much time hanging around there.
Recommendation?
We vape 'em, Cliff said bluntly. Tonight.
Navid shifted his eyes past him to the display window across the store, gazing at the hundreds of pedestrians and dozens of vehicles hurrying past. Drev Starn was an immensely busy city, made all the more frantic by the presence of those warships overhead. Humans and aliens rushing around all over the place.
No, he said slowly. No, they're not on to us. Not yet. They suspect something is in the works, but they don't know for sure. No. Our best plan right now is to lay low and not let them draw us out.
Cliff's lips puckered, but he nodded reluctantly. I still don't like it, but you're the boss. Maybe all they're trying to do is get a handle on vengeance, and they're not going to look for a group that big in a little pet store.
Good point, Navid agreed. We could even consider staging another riot for their benefit if they seem to be getting too close. If you're up to another performance, that is.
Cliff shrugged. Two riots on Bothui might be pushing our luck, he said. But I can get one going if we have to.
Across the room, one of the animals squawked twice and then fell silent again. Probably one of the pregnant Mokrans, Navid decided, muttering in her sleep. He'd better get those injections started if he didn't want a mess of tiny lizards running around underfoot 6 days before he needed them.
I just wish we knew who our opponents were, he commented. Maybe we can find out, Cliff said, pulling out a data pad. I followed him back to the spaceport in their ship. A surplus Cydon MRXBR pacifier, as it turns out.
Navid grimaced. The pacifier had been the Empire's scout vehicle of choice, able to seek out new worlds and deliver a devastating pounding to them if it proved necessary. Considered by the New Republic to be too provocative for the delicate sensitivities of frightened primitives, their use had been summarily discontinued. Just one more reminder, if he'd needed it, of how badly things had been falling apart since Endor.
You get a name?
And a registration code. Cliff said, handing him the data pad. It's the woman's ship, unfortunately. She was the one who unlocked it, but we might still be able to back-check them through it.
Excellent, Navid said as he took the data pad. The Fingertip Express, eh? Sounds like a lifter's ship, all right. A smart-mouthed name for a smart-mouthed lifter.
He handed the data pad back.
There should be a Bureau of Ships and Services office somewhere in Drev Starn. Find it, and see what you can pull up.
Aha!
Miranda said from her ship's tiny computer alcove.
Well, well, well.
Sitting in the lounge just off the alcove, Wedge turned his eyes away from the expensive contour sculpt of the wall in front of him, and his thoughts away from contemplation of how Miranda might have come into possession of such a prize.
You found something?
He asked.
Could be, Corin said,
arms crossed and leaning against the wall. He'd been watching over Miranda's shoulder for the past 2 hours.
3 messages, all short and encrypted, have gone out in the past 5 days, He looked over at Wedge. The last one just this morning.
What time this morning?
Wedge asked, getting to his feet and crossing to the others.
About 10 minutes before we got there,
Miranda said, peering at the display.
I guess we shouldn't have lingered over that drink. Too bad.
Wedge grimaced, a bad taste in his mouth. Too bad wasn't the half of it. With Korn and his Jedi skills along, they might actually have been able to identify and tag the sender if they'd been there in time. If.
Where were the transmissions headed?
Toward Aizlomi sector, Miranda said. Specifically in the direction of the Aizlomi 3 Holonet relay station.
Wedge suppressed a sigh.
In other words, a dead end.
Looks like it.
Still, if they've already sent 3 messages, they might send more, Korn pointed out. His voice was calm and controlled. Without any trace of the frustration and disappointment Wedge knew he must be feeling over this near miss.
If worst comes to worst, we could always stake out the place.
A waste of time, Miranda sniffed. If they've got any brains at all, they'll spot a loiterer upwind from 60 paces away with their eyes closed.
That depends on how the loitering is done, Korin countered stiffly. And on who's doing it.
What? You?
Miranda scoffed, looking him up and down.
Right. Like you wouldn't stand out like a stormtrooper at an Ewok roast.
I thought it was like a Wookiee at a Nogri family reunion.
No, no. You're versatile enough to do both.
Oh, thank you, Korin growled. Thank you very much.
Both of you simmer down,
Wedge interrupted sternly.
Korin's right, Miranda. He's exceptionally good at stakeouts. However, Miranda's right too, Korin. We don't have the time or the troops to cover all outgoing transmissions, even if we were sure they'd use the same center again.
At least we now know for sure that someone's operating here,
Miranda offered.
That's something.
Not much, though, Korin muttered.
It occurs to me, though,
Wedge said, raising his voice,
and there's still one route we haven't tried. Assuming Vengeance isn't homegrown, and considering its anti-Bothan sentiment, I think we can assume that they'll have to have found someplace local to set up shop. Question, where?
Miranda snapped her fingers.
A business. Has to be some kind of business.
She's right,
Korin agreed, his frustration and miffed professional pride suddenly forgotten.
An apartment wouldn't work. Too risky to have lots of people coming and going at odd hours. With a business, you can always cover it as deliveries or clean-up crews.
And working for someone else doesn't give you enough privacy when you need it,
Miranda added.
And it'll have to be something fairly recently set up, and probably as close to the shield generator building as they can get.
My thoughts exactly, Wedge said. And since we can't hit the construction records building until later anyway...
What are we waiting for?
Korin demanded, detaching himself from the wall and heading for the hatchway.
Someone in Drevstan must have a list of all new businesses. Let's go find him.
Chapter 19.
No, Captain Ardiff said, jabbing his fork for emphasis. I don't believe it. Not for a minute.
What about the news reports?
Colonel Boss countered.
Even stuck out here, we've pulled in, what, 5 of them? If this thing's a hoax, it's a criffing good one. If you'll pardon the language, sir.
He added belatedly, looking with some embarrassment at Pelion.
Language pardoned, Colonel,
Pelion said, suppressing a smile. Boss had clawed his way up through the TIE pilot ranks to become the Chimera's fighter commander. And though he tried hard to fit in with the generally more cultured men who made up the officer corps, The saltier language of his youth did periodically intrude. Personally, Pellion rather liked that. Not the expletives, per se, but the fact that the man's language was an outward sign of honest and straightforward opinions or emotions. Unlike some Pellion had dealt with, Boss seldom, if ever, tried to hide his thoughts or feelings behind polite slip-talk.
"They're rumors, Colonel, that's all,"
Artif said, shaking his head.
"Face the facts. Thrawn died. Admiral Pellion was there to see it. Now if that was some trick,
Pellion lowered his eyes to his plate and forked another bite of the braised Brucali, mentally tuning out the discussion. It was the same endless argument, with the same opinions and speculations that had been playing its way around the ship in the week since Lieutenant Mavron had returned with the story of Thrawn's supposed appearance in the Croktar system. Everyone from Artif on down had his own opinion on whether or not it was true. None of them could prove their opinion to anyone else, and the entire ship was about as tense as an overwound throwbow. But the waiting, at least, was about to come to an end. He'd given General Bel Iblis a full month and a half to make his plans, and the Chimera itself had been here at Pessatine for 2 weeks. Clearly, for whatever reason, Bel Iblis wasn't coming. And it was time to go home, to return to the Empire and to Bastion, and on several levels, to find out what exactly Moff Deesra was up to. He would give the order to prepare for departure as soon as he was finished with his meal, if Bel Iblis didn't arrive in the hour after that.
"Admiral Pellion, Captain Artif, this is the bridge,"
Major Tichelle's voice came from the mess table speaker.
"Report, please."
Artif got to the switch first.
"Captain here," he said. "The Admiral's with me. What is it?"
"A ship's just entered the system, sir,"
Tichelle said, his voice tight. Artif flashed Pellion a sharp look.
"A repeat performance by our pirates?"
"I don't think so, sir,"
Tichelle said.
"So far, at least, it's only a single ship. YT-1300 light freighter, minimally armed. They're transmitting a request to come aboard and speak with the Admiral."
Pellion took a deep breath.
"Is there a name attached to the transmission?"
he asked.
"Yes, sir,"
Tichelle said.
"She claims to be the New Republic High Counselor, Leia Organa Solo."
With the four TIE fighters riding escort positions on both flanks, the Falcon rose up out of sight of the distant sun, up into the shadow of the Star Destroyer's hangar bay.
"We are committed now," Elagos said softly from the seat beside Leia.
"Yes," Leia agreed,
her hands resting on the controls, watching as the Chimera's tractor beam reeled them steadily into itself.
"We are indeed."
"Does that disturb you?"
the Ka'amasi asked.
"What are you thinking?"
Leia shrugged, a quick movement of tense shoulders.
"On one level, of course, it disturbs me," she told him. "Risks are always something a rational being prefers to avoid. But not all risks are bad. All in all, this is a good risk."
She half turned and tried a smile.
"As to the other part of your question, I was just thinking that if 3PO were here, he'd probably be saying we are doomed about now."
Elagos chuckled, a uniquely Ka'amasi sound.
"Very good," he said. "I have not known much about you, Counselor, save what I have read and heard from others. This voyage, short though it has been greatly instructive. Whatever happens next, I will always consider myself honored to have had these few days together with you."
Leia took a deep breath. The words themselves, taken alone, could be construed to have an ominous ring to them. But spoken with the Ka'amasi's quiet warmth, all potential threat or fear vanished. What came across instead was courage and hope and resolve. An inspiration and strength that came not so much from Elagos as it did from hidden reserves of her own. reserves his words and presence were somehow able to draw out of her. It was small wonder, she thought with a distant ache, that the power-insatiable Senator Palpatine had wanted such a dangerous people destroyed. There was a lone figure waiting at the foot of the Falcon's ramp as Leia and the other three started down. A white-haired man of medium height, his face lined with age, but with the parade ground straight back of a professional military officer. He wore the Imperial uniform well, Leia thought. He wore the chest insignia of a fleet admiral even better.
Counselor Organa Solo,
he said, nodding gravely as she approached.
I'm Admiral Pellion. Welcome aboard the Chimera.
Thank you, Admiral, Leia said, nodding back. It's been a long time.
His forehead wrinkled.
I'm afraid you have me at a disadvantage, he said. I wasn't aware we'd met.
It wasn't a formal introduction, Leia told him. But I remember my father pointing you out to me as one of the fleet's most promising officers during the annual Grand Alderaanian Gathering at the Royal Pavilion when I was 10.
Pellion's lip twitched.
I remember those days well, he said quietly. In some ways, I'd prefer not to.
His eyes shifted to Elagos, standing at Leia's left.
Perhaps you'll introduce me to the rest of your delegation.
Certainly,
Leia said, passing over for the moment the distinctly unofficial status of the group.
This is Elagos Akla, trustent for the Kaamasi Remnant.
Pellion smiled faintly as he nodded.
Trustant Akla?
Admiral Pellion, Elagos said, lowering his head in a Kaamasi bow.
On my right is Sakasak, Clan Talaxar.
Leia continued, gesturing to the Nogri beside her. Pellion's smile remained, but Leia could sense a new brittleness behind it.
Of course, the Admiral said. Alderaanian, Kaamasi, and Nogri. Three beings with the most reason to hate the Empire.
Sakasak stirred.
We hold no anger toward you personally, Admiral, Elagos said calmly before the Nogri could speak. Nor have we animosity toward the people of the Empire. Each of our worlds was destroyed by the hand of Emperor Palpatine, and he too is now dead. Continuing to nurture the fires of hatred would gain us nothing.
Thank you, Trustant,
Pellion said.
I appreciate your generosity and your wisdom.
His eyes flicked briefly to Sakasak, then turned to Ghent, standing nervously at Elagos's other side.
And what particular grievance do you represent, sir?
Me? Ghent asked, starting. Oh, no. I'm not part of this group. I'm just the slicer who reconstructed Vermel's message for General Peliblis. The last hint of a smile vanished from Pellion's face.
What do you mean, reconstructed?
He demanded.
Didn't the Colonel present his message in person?
I'm afraid he didn't get that far, Leia said. According to General Peliblis, his corvette was intercepted by a Star Destroyer while on approach to Morishim.
Pellion's eyes had gone deadly.
Intercepted and destroyed?
No. Or at least not at that time, Leia said. The Star Destroyer brought his ship into its hangar bay and then escaped.
I see.
For a long moment, Pellion stood there, his eyes gazing at nothing, his face hard and almost cruel, his emotions edged with simmering anger. Leia stretched out to the Force, trying to read past the emotion, and wondering if she should break the silence or wait for him to do so. Elagos took the decision out of her hands.
I take it Colonel Vermel was a close friend,
he commented quietly. Pellion's eyes and attention came back.
I will hope that he still is, he said. If not, someone will pay heavily for his death,
he exhaled.
But You came to talk peace, not vengeance. If you follow me, I have a room prepared for us off the hangar bay.
I prefer to hold our discussion aboard my ship, if you don't mind, Leia said. I'm afraid my bodyguards insist on that.
For a fraction of a second, there was a flicker of uncertainty, even fear in Pelion's emotions. But then the fear faded, and he again smiled.
You have more Nugri aboard, of course,
he said, glancing up at the Falcon looming over them.
No doubt watching even now, with weapons at the ready.
There will be no danger to you, Admiral,
Elico spoke up.
Not unless you yourself bring it aboard.
Pelion waved a hand at the ramp.
In that case, Counselor, I accept. Please, lead the way.
A minute later, Leia, Pelion, and Elegos were seated around the Falcon's game table. A distressingly informal place for such a momentous occasion, Leia thought with some embarrassment, but the only place on the ship where they could all sit comfortably together. Sakasak, without comment, had taken up a guard position where he could watch both their discussion and the entrance ramp. Ghent, also without comment, had gone over to the tech station and was busying himself with the Falcon's computer.
I'll get right to the point, Counselor,
Pelion said, his eyes flicking briefly to Ghent and the Nogri.
The war that began 20-odd years ago is effectively over, and the Empire is lost.
I agree, Leia said. Is this opinion shared by others in the Empire?
A muscle in Pelion's cheek twitched.
I'm sure the average Imperial citizen has recognized that truth for quite some time, he said. It's merely been the leadership who have clung to the hope that the inevitable could somehow be prevented.
And does that leadership now agree with the two of us and the average Imperial citizen?
Yes,
Pelion said.
Reluctantly, but yes. I've been authorized by the 8 remaining Moffs to open peace negotiations with the New Republic.
Leia felt her throat tighten. She had heard Vermel's message, had come aboard and seen Pelion waiting alone for her. But only now did it suddenly seem truly real.
Peace with the Empire.
Yet, as you have already said, the Empire has lost, Elego spoke into the silence. What then remains to be negotiated?
Leia resettled her shoulders, sending a silent word of thanks in Elegos's direction for his subtle reminder of her duty here. She was representing the New Republic, and could not allow the emotional lure of peace to blind her to the hard, intellectual realities of the situation.
Trustant Akla makes a good point, she said. What you would gain from a peace treaty is obvious. What would we gain?
Perhaps what we would gain is not as obvious as you think,
Pelion said.
The New Republic is, after all, struggling with internal turmoil, with every indication that matters are getting worse.
He looked pointedly at Elegos.
Several of the Moffs, in fact, believe you're on the verge of collapsing into total civil war over this Kar-Masi issue. In the midst of such anarchy, the remnants of the Empire could easily be overlooked. Why then should we bother with the humiliation of a treaty at all?
Leia's mouth felt dry. It was an all too reasonable question.
If you really believed we were about to destroy ourselves, you wouldn't be here, she pointed out.
Perhaps,
Pelion said.
Perhaps I merely don't believe the more virulent haters of the Empire would forget about us.
He paused.
Or perhaps I may be able to keep that civil war from happening.
Leia frowned.
How?
Let me first state what the Empire would want included in any treaty between us,
Pelion said.
We would want our current borders confirmed and accepted by Coruscant, guarantees of free travel and trade between our worlds and those of the New Republic. No harassment, no border skirmishes, no propaganda pressure against us.
What about the non-humans living under Imperial rule?
Sakasak demanded.
Are we to merely accept the slavery?
Pelion shook his head.
The Empire, which once enslaved and exploited thinking beings, is dead,
he told the Nogri.
The human domination of Palpatine long ago became full cooperation between all beings within our borders.
Do all your subjects agree that they're now equals?
Leia asked.
Probably not,
Pelion conceded.
But once we have the security of a peace treaty, any Imperial system wishing to join the New Republic would be offered the chance to do so.
He lifted his eyebrows.
By the same token, we would expect systems within your borders who wish to rejoin the Empire to also be allowed to make that choice, with the same security and free trade guarantees extended to them.
Sakasak bit out a Nogri curse.
What people would be so foolish as to give you their freedom?
He demanded contemptuously.
You might be surprised, Pelion said. Freedom, after all, is a highly relative and subjective thing. And as I say, we're not the Empire you knew.
The Nogri rumbled under his breath again, but remained silent.
Of course, all guarantees of safety would work the other direction as well,
Pelion said, turning back to Leia.
No attacks by Imperial forces, no provocation, no hired privateers.
His face twitched in an almost smile.
And, of course, if we should happen to stumble across another superweapon Palpatine had hidden away, we would work with you to dismantle it.
Leia braced herself.
And what about the superweapon you're already using?
Pelion frowned.
What superweapon?
The one that nearly defeated us once before,
Leia said.
Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Pelion's lips compressed briefly, and Leia could sense the wave of uncertainty and quiet fear washing through him.
I don't know, Counselor. I have no idea at all what's going on there.
Leia threw a glance at Elagos.
What do you mean?
Exactly what I said,
Pelion told her.
I've been here at Pessetine waiting for General Bell Iblis for the past 2 weeks, and was running under a communications blackout for several days before that. I didn't even know Thrawn had been reported alive until a week ago.
Leia frowned, stretching out to Pelion with the Force. But there was no duplicity in his thoughts or emotions that she could detect.
You say reported alive, Admiral, Elagos said. Does your choice of words imply you don't believe he has actually returned?
I don't know what to believe, Trustant,
Pelion said.
Certainly I had every reason to think he was dead. I was there on the Chimera's bridge, standing at his side when he appeared to die.
Again, you say appeared to die,
Elagos persisted.
Did he or did he not truly die?
I truly do not know,
Pelion said with a sigh.
Thrawn was an alien, with an alien physiology, and...
He shook his head.
Has he actually been seen by anyone from the New Republic? Someone whose word and judgment you trust.
My friend Lando Calrissian was intercepted and taken aboard the Relentless, along with the Diamalan Senator, Leia said. Both of them claimed it was indeed Thrawn.
The Relentless,
Pelion murmured, frowning.
Dorja's ship. And he was one of those who did meet Thrawn personally. Hard to believe he would be easily taken in by a trick. Or, for that matter, that he would risk his ship without exceptionally good reason.
Leia hesitated, but there was no easy way to say this.
It occurs to me, Admiral, that these talks may be somewhat premature, she said. If Thrawn is alive, then you are presumably no longer head of the Imperial military.
If he's alive, he will most certainly relieve me of supreme command,
Pelion said evenly.
However, at the moment, that consideration is irrelevant. The military is subordinate to the Moffs, and the Moffs have authorized me to negotiate this treaty.
Wouldn't that authority be rescinded, though, in the face of Thrawn's return? Leia countered.
It may, Pelion acknowledged. But until I'm informed of such a decision, my authority stands.
I see, Leia murmured, gazing at the old admiral with a sudden new understanding. He had learned about Thrawn's return a full week ago, yet instead of rushing back to learn more, he had deliberately remained here under communications blackout. Not just to wait for Bel Iblis, but to make sure he still had the authority to negotiate if and when Bel Iblis arrived. To start the ball rolling, perhaps beyond the ability of the Moffs or even Thrawn to easily stop it. This was not a game. Or at least not a game he was helping to run. Admiral Pelion, supreme commander of Imperial forces, genuinely wanted peace.
Did Thrawn say anything to Calrissian and the Senator?
Pelion asked into Leia's musings.
I presume they were allowed to leave. Very few people simply escape from an Imperial Star Destroyer.
Actually, in some respects, his message was similar to yours, Leia said. He warned that the New Republic was headed for self-destruction, and offered to help us avoid that.
Are you considering his offer?
Unfortunately, his proposed method was deemed unacceptable by the Senate, Leia said. He wanted to speak privately with the Bothan leaders, and from those conversations determine who had sabotaged the Ka'amasi shields.
Interesting,
Pelion said, rubbing his chin thoughtfully.
I wonder how merely talking with them would accomplish that, unless the clan leaders do indeed know the truth.
They claim they don't, Leia said. And considering the growing threat to the entire Bothan species, I think they would give us that information if they had it.
You suggested you might also have a way to prevent civil war,
Ilagos reminded the Admiral.
Would you care to elaborate?
Leia could sense Pelion pulling his attention back from his own thoughts.
I'm sure it's occurred to you that the crisis could be resolved by finding a complete version of the Ka'amas document, he said. In exchange for favorable peace terms, the Empire would be willing to offer you a copy of that record.
Leia shot a glance at Sakasak, saw the Nogri's own subtle reaction. If they were on schedule, Han and Lando should be right now conducting their own search for that record on Bastion. Just like that? She asked Pelion. You'd simply turn it over to us?
Once we have it in hand, yes.
He paused.
There is, however, one problem. If it does indeed exist, it would be located in the special files section of the archives, which is severely restricted and heavily encrypted. I don't have any way into those files, neither does anyone I know. If we're going to get to the document in time, the New Republic will need to loan us a top-rate decryption expert.
There was a sort of choked-off gurgle from the direction of the tech station. Gend was still facing the control board, but his back had suddenly gone rigid.
Where would he need to go?
She asked Pelion, her eyes still on Gend.
To Bastion?
No, to the ubiquitous base at Yaga Minor,
Pelion said.
The commander there is a personal friend, and there's a somewhat isolated computer access station he could use. Bastion itself would be far too dangerous.
Leia looked back at him, her heart catching suddenly in her throat.
How do you mean dangerous?
Bastion is the home base and stronghold of one of the most vehemently anti-peace officials in the entire Empire,
Pelion said grimly.
Moff Deesera. He also appears to be up to his neck in a private little war using mercenary pirate gangs and illegally obtained funds.
Yes, we've noticed all the pirate activity, Leia said,
fighting to keep her voice steady. Han and Lando on Bastion. You don't think Moff Deesra would appreciate having a new Republic representative on his world?
Pelion snorted.
Digging into private Imperial files? Hardly. Your expert wouldn't be there 6 hours before Deesra would know about it. It wouldn't be 6 hours more before some convenient accident would happen to him. But he'd be safe enough on Yaga Minor.
I'm glad to hear that, Leia said, looking again at Sakasak. The Nogri's face was rigid with the same ache and fear she herself was feeling. Han on Bastion, in the middle of a vengeful Moff stronghold.
Would it be possible for you to supply such an expert?
Pelion asked. With a supreme effort, Leia pushed her fears away. I don't know, she said. I don't think so. Pelion seemed taken aback.
You don't think so?
No, Leia said, glancing over at the tech station again. Ghent was still facing the control board, but his head was turned just enough to let him surreptitiously watch the conversation around the game table. Perhaps later, after we have an official agreement. But not yet.
By the time there's an agreement, it might be too late,
Pelion warned.
Our scout ships are picking up only occasional news reports, but even from what I know, the situation in the New Republic is clearly getting worse. Even with an expert slicer at work, the project is going to take some time.
He grimaced.
And there's one other factor as well. We suspect that one of Moff Deesra's agents may already have found his way into those special files once. We don't know what he was looking for, but the Kaar-Mas document is definitely one possible target. If we delay too long, and he's able to get in again to erase the file, we may never learn the truth. Only if we act immediately.
All right, Ghent interrupted, swiveling abruptly around in his chair to face them. All right, I'll go. Leia blinked. Once again, he had taken her completely by surprise. You don't mean that, she said. This could be dangerous.
The danger would be extremely small,
Pelion insisted.
Doesn't matter, Ghent said. His voice was trembling, but his jaw was set firmly. On the way from Coruscant, Elagos told me all about what happened to his world. It was terrible. Everyone killed? All the animals, too? I hated the people who'd done it. I really hated them. And I hated the Bothans for making the whole thing happen in the first place.
He looked over at Elagos.
But he told me hatred was wrong. That was one of those things that hurt the hater more than the people he hated. He told me there can be justice without hatred, and punishment without revenge. He said we were all responsible for what we do and what we don't do, and no one should have to pay for someone else's crimes.
He locked eyes with Leia.
I'm a slicer, Counselor Organa Solo. I'm a good slicer, and I'm responsible for what I do and what I don't do. Just like you or Elagos. If I can help and I don't, I'm just as guilty as anyone else.
He waved a hand helplessly.
I'm not too good at stuff like this. You understand what I'm trying to say? I understand perfectly.